A few thoughts about two very different kinds of believers. This may sound very simplistic, and I actually think it is too simplistic, but I think there is a sense in which you can divide believers into two very general camps or groups, the one being much larger than the other. The first, and by far the most common, is what I would say is a group comprised of those who every day live their own life according to their own will, and yet they find that God or religion of some sort are in some ways very important or advantageous to their own purposes. What I mean is that their life, the essence of their life, consists in things that they pursue, in activities that they enjoy, in the people they like to hang out with, in the things that they possess. It's their own thoughts, it's their own interests, their own opinions, values, desires, dreams, etc. And yet they have found it to be very beneficial, for a variety of personal reasons, to have God or religion be among the many things that constitute their lives. And therefore, they have adopted a view of God that serves the same purpose that many other things do in their life. Namely, it helps them get what they want, and it helps them to keep what they love. Now, this is the religion of the natural man, under whatever name or denomination that it might be called. It's just man at the center, living in himself and living for himself, but then trying to use God or use religion in some way to bless, to protect, to affirm, to secure, to comfort or lengthen or adorn his own natural life. Now, believers of this sort may or may not talk a lot about God's words or God's truth or God's activities, but underneath all of the talk of doctrines and practices, the view of God, I mean, the way they really think about God, their beliefs about him, the way that they're following him, all of that corresponds really nicely with their own will and their own perspective. He's the God that protects what they have. He's the God that affirms what they already are and want to be. He's the God that helps them find the best things to pursue and seek after, to strive after. He's the God that points out the way to get what's important. He's the God that speaks peace and comfort to their minds when they're in distress or guilt or disappointment. He's the God that decrees from heaven what they already want to believe, what they already do believe and want to believe and agree with. And so he providentially steers them where they already want to go. And because they love their own will, these sorts of religious people are very quick to tell you that they truly love their God, and they can't imagine having a life without that God. And that's totally true. Religion has a very important place in the lives of such people. It makes their lives feel far more important, far more deep or meaningful, more safe. It gives them a layer of spiritual relevance, of depth. It alleviates feelings of emptiness. It offers hope for the future or for an afterlife. These things are very important to people, and to live without these things is, it's something that nobody wants. And so, as I was saying, in a sense, it is true. They love this God that they have formed and fashioned for themselves. But nowhere in this first group will you really find many people who are willing to talk about what they might have to lose, what they might have to change, what they might have to abandon or surrender or put off in order to really please this God or walk with this God in spirit and truth. Nobody talks about having to hate the things and turn from the things that are contrary to God. In fact, there's little talk at all of sin or sinfulness in the heart of man, in the mind of man, in the activities of man, in the common pursuits and pastimes of man. They don't quote scriptures that say things like, "Your iniquities have separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear." Or, "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." These sorts of scriptures get little attention in this group because they quickly take man out from the center of the stage. So this is the first and largest group. It's those who bring their own version of God into their lives. And then who, perhaps unknowingly, define him and serve him in a way that corresponds perfectly with their own perspective and with their own will. And this is precisely what we see in Exodus 32, when Israel couldn't find Moses. He was up the mountain, and they wanted a god to show them what to do and how to go forward. It says, "And Aaron received the gold from their hands, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. And they said, 'This,' oh, then he said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.' So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar for it and made a proclamation and said, 'Tomorrow is a feast of the Lord.' Then they all rose up early the next day, offered burnt offerings, brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." The other kind of believer is very much the opposite. Far from trying to bring their own version of God into their own lives so that he may be defined and used by them, these humble-hearted believers bring their entire lives to the feet of God in order to have him expose and correct and define everything that is real and true about himself and about them. These have seen and they've felt that there's nothing more dangerous than following their own will. There's nothing more spiritually blind than natural sight. There's nothing more deceptive or disappointing than the desires of the flesh, and nothing more to be feared than to be found living your life as a lie. These believers have a healthy distrust of their own perspective. They've learned to fear their own ambitions, and they know from experience, as it says in Genesis 8:21, that the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. And so this second and smaller group are the returning prodigals. They're those who are coming to God weary and heavy laden, with a sight and a sense in their heart of the world's corruption, of their own corruption, of the world's vanity. They're seeking true rest, and their relationship with God involves a sincere attempt to continually turn to him, turn to his light, to submit to the daily work of the cross, because they've seen, as it says in 1 Kings 8:38, the plague of their own heart, far too clearly to ever want God to affirm it, or to approve that plague, or commend it as it continues on in its natural course. No, they've seen that there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And so rather than adoring the God of their own ideas and their own imaginations, this group rather seeks and loves and fears the true God who unmasks their imaginations and corrects their ideas and exposes their selfish intentions and uncovers their pride and their ambition and their hidden motivations. The hearts of these are filled with verses like Psalm 86:11, "Teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name." Or Psalm 19:9, "The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless, and I shall be innocent of great transgression." Or Psalm 51:10, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." Christians of this kind have little to say for themselves, and their hope is not fixed in what they will somehow be or accomplish or possess, but their hope is fixed in the power of God that heals their spiritually blind eyes and opens their spiritually deaf ears and cleanses their inward leprosy and casts out all demons and makes the lame to walk in the way of life.